Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Okay, I think that was a good intro.
Welcome to Lost and Rewound on
Radio Free Brooklyn. My name is Alon.
I'm Will Hasty.
And I'm Catherine Dunn.
I'm the only one without a last name because Alon, when I was a kid, I was like, I don't want my last name as an actor. I want to just be the one with the first, with only like one name, like RuPaul or Cher.
Or Madonna, but let's just shorten that
Prince.
To four letters.
I just want to be a symbol. Do you guys like Catherine Ann better than Catherine?
Catherine Ann Dunn?
No, like Catherine Ann, also followed by Catherine Ann Dunn, but like just calling her Catherine Ann instead of just Catherine.
Nah, I like Kath. And I got to say, Catherine, I feel like, but I like the long name Catherine Ann Dunn. I mean, that's fun.
I like the long name.
Catherine and Catherine and Will have been killing it as my interim assistants, I guess.
Interim, we're just temps.
I prefer the term aspiring co-host, but whatever.
They are collaborators here with me that have been very helpful for the past month or so here on Lost and Rewound. You all know about Catherine after many an appearance, and Will has been killing it, being very consistent. So thank you to you both. Lost and Rewound comes to you every week on Radio Free Brooklyn, which can be heard on the Radio Free Brooklyn mobile app. You can download the app at radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android. We are a 501c3 non-for-profit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. Because we rely primarily on donations from listeners like you, we invite you to make that one-time donation, that monthly pledge, you know. It's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate, and any and all cents that you do contribute will help us continue to stay on the air. You know, all your donations are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law, so pledge whatever you can afford, radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Lastly, if you have to check out any of Radio Free Brooklyn fare of Lost and Rewound's old episodes, you can go to lostandrewound.podomatic.com. But let's get more into what this week's episode is going to uncover. So let's do that. Now. Josh Powell is an actor, comedian, and podcaster, born and raised in Queens. He has a podcast that's currently trying to raise money on Patreon called The Low End Gigolos. We have him here in the studio to talk about that as well as some old clips because that's what Lost and Rewound is all about. Please welcome Josh Powell.
How you doing, Josh?
Awesome. It's great to be here.
Your relationship in this room is with Catherine in that you guys met at an open mic recently.
Yes.
That was literally the first meeting you guys ever had.
It was the first time we've ever met.
Which open
mic?
Wow.
It was the dump.
The dump, yeah.
Yes.
What's
every
the dump?
Tuesday at 8 p.m.
Yeah, at the creek.
The creek in the cave.
Oh.
Jake Hart.
It's a storytelling mic.
Okay.
Where comedians go and try not to tell jokes for 7 minutes.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
And instead of telling the very somber, serious stories instead?
Well, they
sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they tell stories, but a lot of them just end up telling jokes anyway, even though it's like, don't go up there and tell jokes.
I mean, are they stories with a comedic, like, tint, are these guys just fall into comedy, or it really is whatever the fuck you want to say?
Sometimes I think they're just taking their jokes and then adding stories around them. So they can go up and do
making them up.
Are you?
But she was great.
Oh,
I don't know if, other day, can we talk about it?
Yeah.
Totally.
She told us a story about her going to a sex party, which was
nice.
Which is pretty hot. Yeah.
When was that, I should say?
When? I think it was August of 17. Was the one that I told.
Okay.
Was from August of 17.
Yeah.
Can we get a quick synopsis?
What do you remember being your favorite parts of the story?
What's his name yelling at you?
Yeah. So I went with a friend of mine, and he made it very uncomfortable. There was a situation at the radio station that night.
Wait, who is this friend? Do we know him? Please tell me, guys. Please tell me we know him.
No, I would say it because he has no problem.
I was praying it was Frankie Z.
It's not. But you're not. I will give you a hint. He and Frankie Z are from the same chunk of my life. Like, we have similar origin stories, and we were on the same first improv team ever.
I think I heard about this story in a car.
You're not going to guess, but that's exactly who it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you'll never get it right. You'll just spend a lot of time.
Does it matter who it is, though?
It doesn't. No.
So then it's all good.
I just like playing games. So, so yeah, we go, whatever. Curious. There's a situation here with the sandwich. Remember Sandwich Gate?
Beef
Gate?
Yes.
So that's going on, and it's my show that is the problem. So I'm dealing with that while also going to a sex party wearing jeans because I am Mork from Ork.
Nothing sexier than jeans in an orgy.
Nothing sexier than Ork.
Hello.
Mork. Yeah.
Nanu.
So he had a problem with it. Other people did not have a problem with it. Every time he left me alone, people would come to me and be nice. And then he would come with his bad energy. He's like, you're ruining this for me.
And what, like, he really meant was, I am incredibly uncomfortable with this entire situation. Please make me comfortable. Make me horny.
100%. He's like, I can't go into the playroom because you've got on pants. I can't drink. I can't dance. And I can't go into the BDSM room. And I'm like, one, you can go and dance. You just can't fucking dance. You can't drink because you're a recovering alcoholic. It's not my pants. And why can't
I think
you
I've
go
suddenly realized
people?
Who this was.
What? And see, get over it.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, get over it. What was the story you told?
Oh, I told the story of how I became a valedictorian of my GED high school.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Wasn't it HED?
GED.
GED.
My sister got her GED.
General education degree.
I'm general equivalency.
That's the thing. It wasn't really a GED. It was a high school equivalency diploma.
That's what I was saying.
Right.
It was an HED, a head.
Yes,
you got a head,
HED. I got
not
head.
A GED.
I got head.
Nice.
What happened was I had missed 170 days of my freshman year in high school.
Okay.
And
can we ask why?
Because I was... I don't know, smoking pot and tripping on acid or something like that.
Okay. Bullied.
And I was getting terribly bullied by my drug dealer.
So I owed a fuck ton of money.
But I had this fear growing up as a kid that I would get left back, and my fear was about to come true. They told me, they're like, you're going to get left back. It's inevitable. And I didn't want to drop out of school because that was like my next biggest So actually,
Mom, I'm doing comedy.
A bully friend of mine, you know, he was like, hey, he came up to me, he was like, hey, Fatso, I found out a way that you don't have to drop out of school. They have a program over the summer that you take for 6 weeks, and if you take this program for 6 weeks, they give you a test, you pass the test, you have your diploma. And I thought it was brilliant. But then I didn't show up to the program until like week number five and a half. And the lady's like, where have you been? And I was like, oh, my grandfather died. And she's like, okay, but the test is, you know,
tomorrow.
You haven't practiced for it at all. And I was like, I promise. I was like, I can do it. Just give me a shot. And then I didn't show. This was Wednesday. And then I didn't show back up till Monday. And she was like, the test started on Friday. And it's a two-part test. And it's a four-hour-long test. And she was like, there's only 2 hours left. And I begged her to let me do it. So they let me take the test. Fast forward a few weeks later, back in the days, they gave you a number, so you would call up the number and it would just tell you either pass or fail. So it was like, you have passed.
Yeah.
So I went to go pick up my diploma and all the teachers from the school were lined up in the staircase and they start slow clapping.
Are you serious?
And she comes up to me. She was
so sweet, dude.
She was this big, beautiful black woman. And she came up to me. She went, child, we are so proud of you. I'm like, what? I thought they were making fun of me because, like, they were proud that I had just passed the test.
Right, right, right. Like,
she goes,
you tried. No, but seriously, that's
goes,
really
child, you are valedictorian.
What?
Wow.
And I was valedictorian of GED High School. And I won a 2-year scholarship to St. Mary College.
Oh, cool. My God. That's amazing.
Which I didn't do. And then I went,
which I then threw out. But what?
Wait.
For real? What? Why didn't she capitalize on that opportunity?
He wouldn't have shown up.
Well, last night I divulged, I was recruited to go work on Wall Street. So I was working for the likes of the Wolf of Wall Street and people like that.
Where were you working?
Yeah. Where would you have been recruited? Because, I mean, that's a rare... I mean, if you get a GED and to be recruited, that's incredibly rare.
One of my local friend drug dealers recruited me because he knew. He was like, oh, you want to be an actor, you want to be a comic. He's like, you're good with bullshitting. He's like, you should come work for me on Wall Street. And he brought me into this mafioso office. And I became a legitimate stockbroker. 2 or 3 years down the line, I took my Series 7. I did show
wait,
up.
Wait a minute. This had to be in what, like the 80s? When was this?
So the 90s.
Old. No, this was 1996, 97.
Oh my God. Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been an impressive time in your life.
Stockbrokers still existed?
Well, I mean, they do.
It's not all acorns.
But the internet's different now.
This
internet makes it
different. It 100% still exists. And these weren't like legitimate stock. I mean, people had licenses, but these were
right.
These were scams.
As opposed to being somebody in your sweatpants working from home as a stockbroker, you had to go into an office. And
yeah, no, we got dressed up. We put a tie on. We showed up.
I'm going to ask
a lot
you,
of cocaine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cocaine and prostitutes. It was great.
Yeah. So then you were involved in being an actor before this happened. So by being a stockbroker, does that sort of, I don't want to say if it like totally distracted you from being what you wanted to be, but did it lend itself making that kind of money, or
did
were you lost in the sauce of being the you know, the sauce being money and realizing that you just wanted to focus
on
that?
You know, I was at the time I was working for an electronics company called Nobody Beats the Wiz. It was my parents were executives in the company, so.
Because I'm the Wiz.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Wait,
nobody beats the Wiz. Nobody beats.
Oh my God!
You said your parents were executives.
Yes, my stepfather was the head of human resources, and my mom was the manager.
That's fascinating.
So I was unfireable. So it was a great job.
Political power.
They actually gave two of the executives kids jobs. Like, they never really hired young people. And I think I was like 14 or 15. And they gave the other like vice president's kid a job. And his name was also Josh. But that Josh ended up getting caught stealing from the store.
Nope.
And I didn't. Because I knew to take the tags off.
Hey, you good Josh or bad Josh? Oh, you're good Josh.
Good at
Come
stealing.
On in, Josh.
The moral of the story is do drugs, kids.
Yeah, it sharpens you, you know, microdosing it.
Yeah. Well, that is absolutely fascinating. It's funny because I was just this past week in a PC Richards & Sons, which might as well be the long-standing appliance store that Nobody Beats the Wiz was in the same competition.
They survived. You know why they survived?
Why did they survive?
They own every store that you walk into. They own the building.
Plus, they never had to pay for the actual brick and mortar overhead.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Is that the trick, really?
That's their longevity trick, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely helped them right now. Yeah.
Well, you were involved in sort of hustling and making money on your own, separate from your parents' business, obviously, since that business did not really last very long. I don't think it lasted past 95, 94.
No, it lasted into the, like, early 2000s.
Really?
They got bought by Cablevision, and then Cablevision...
Just FM. Liquidated them.
Yeah, they ended up in the dump.
Oh,
wait,
Dolan.
But so how was that a real downfall for your parents? Or, I mean, I can't imagine it was.
They switched careers. My stepfather and my mother were very hardworking people. Yeah. I'll give you some extra background on myself. So I had a duality in my life. My father was a strip club owner in New York City.
No, nice. Dude, really?
Wow, yeah. This is a great story. This is a great story.
My dad owned one of the largest strip club chains.
Which one? Which one?
Goldfinger's?
No fucking yeah. way.
I didn't even know that was a strip club in New York, but great.
Yeah, they were. Well, he had a few of them up and down the East Coast.
Goldfinger's.
Okay. Runway 69. You ever hear of that?
I have not. What? I can't say.
My father in...
For a second, I thought you were going to say, like, the Sapphire Club. You'd be the, like, one of the two only remaining strip clubs in New York? Holy shit.
No, there's none left of what my... Even the namesake of it.
In New York City, you're saying?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Correct. And not in the state of
how,
New York.
So when you were a child, your father had this business?
Well, when I was a young kid, it was discotheques. My father was this Israeli man who came to the U.S.
He's Israeli?
Huh?
You said he was Israeli?
He was Israeli.
Okay.
He passed away a couple of years ago.
Now. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Were these discotheques that evolved into strip clubs?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Interesting.
When I was a kid, like, I have memories of hanging out around Chaka Khan.
Nice.
Rebbie Jackson there. Yeah. Like really cool stuff. Then in like the 90s, it became like freestyle music, you know, like Guido music.
Yep.
The stuff they play on like KTU.
Yeah.
Like the old stuff.
New York City!
And then in 1992, he's like, Joshy, I came up with a brilliant plan. I'm going to turn the club into a strip club and I'm going to call it Goldfingers.
I mean, that's like a super villain origin. That's amazing.
I was like, that's brilliant, Dad. I was like, that's awesome. And the greatest thing my dad ever did to my life, and like we had a very strained relationship, but in 1992 or 3, when I was like 13 or 14, I think it was like right after my bar mitzvah, my father decided to open the first all-nude strip club right in the middle of my conservative Jewish neighborhood.
Wonderful.
And it became a focal point of protests for like a year.
Our strippers also have zitzits and across the board.
Well, I can't find it. I've looked for it so hard.
Mm-hmm. But Wiggles.
That was this competition.
Ah.
But there was...
Kath, I love how you even know.
I believe...
Well, Wiggles was right next to Nobody Beats the Wiz. I used to work right next to Wiggles.
I did not know there was a Wiz there.
Yes, wow. 63rd Drive.
Oh, my God.
But there was a derivative show of, I think, 60 Minutes, and my father had an interview with Ed Bradley. And he's interviewing my father, and my dad's going, this is a very upscale club. We have lawyers coming, doctors, there's rabbis who come here. I'm like... I'm just imagining like every single guy walking there like, please don't tell them that I'm coming to your establishment.
I mean, just last week I saw the mayor. I see, you know, wonderful. I mean, Supreme Court Justice. We get gold cans.
He was outing everybody. So there was
amazing.
There was protest there for like about a year. Like I went away to Israel for the summer and I came back and they were still protesting. And
you went to the Maccabee Games. No, I'm kidding.
I was a very, you know, I told you I was like a thuggy, stupid kid, you know, drinking 40s and hanging out with like idiots. There was cameras there every day. There was picketers and everything. It was great. I'm walking by one day and one of the girls who I had gone to elementary school's mother notices me and she goes, that's the owner's son.
Wow, great mom.
Everybody outs everybody.
And the entire freaking crowd turns around. I had to put my 40 down and walk away.
He had to look at me hard in my 40s.
It's like one of those moments that I envision like a sort of a scene like at a PCU. Where like the kid is being the target, and then he just ends up getting chased around campus by every protest group that exists.
Pretty much.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Catherine?
Just one hit.
So good, Josh. Your involvement in entrepreneurialness is clearly stemmed from your parents.
Yes.
Let me ask you, where in Queens are you from then?
Forest Hills.
You're from Forest Hills.
Forest Hills.
The Ramones, and baby.
Forest Hills being somewhere that is well connected to your being, and you're still there now.
I'm back there, yeah.
You have a son.
Yes.
How old is your son?
How old is your son?
He'll be 6 in January.
Oh my God, congratulations,
Thank
dude.
You so much, man. He's the best.
What kind of behavior is he exhibiting? Is he that like his father? Is he getting entrepreneurial as well?
He is... I feel like he's just like me when I was a kid, except he hasn't been exposed to the atrocities that I was exposed to.
Right.
It's crazy because you look at them at a certain age and you're like, that shit shouldn't have happened around me when I was that size.
Yeah.
I have, you know, Times Square in the 80s. Nothing. Was a cesspool.
Exactly.
It was like horrific.
Titties, drugs.
Yeah. And, but my dad used to take, before he owned strip clubs, all his gangster friends owned CD strip clubs, and he would take me along with him. So I have memories of like...
Son, this is the world.
This is my son. And I would, I remember like seeing women with their breasts exposed, and, you know, obviously I'm not sexually aroused. I'm 5 or 4.
But really? I was sexually aroused.
Yeah. I mean, my 4-year-old cousin just walked into the room in Thanksgiving and went, "My teacher makes my pee pee hard." Like, literally.
What?
I swear to God.
Fuck.
Autoeroticism is a thing. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's just kicking in.
I don't know. I like to look at my son and be like, he's innocent and perfect, and I want to keep him that way.
Well, I got to say, 6 is definitely, I just have little cousins who are that age. I had no idea how much fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
6 is a good age.
Yeah. They're so fun and funny. And I mean, at least with him, I mean, not all kids have a positive outlook and are like, I see like little miserable kids, just like you see miserable adults.
Yeah.
But he's just so happy.
You weren't miserable.
That's great.
No, I was a really happy kid who slowly became miserable.
when could you remember the last time as a child that you were happy without any of that jadedness?
When my father took us to Action Park.
What was happening? Nice. What happened to Action Park?
My father took us to Action Park, and actually, you guys,
where is that?
Actually, you know, Johnny Knoxville did a movie about it a year ago.
Okay.
It was this park they built in New Jersey.
It
was an attraction where they had like cliff dives and like crazy water slides and all types of like Tarzan ropes.
Sure.
But it was like infamous for being completely like
insanely unsafe.
Super unsafe, and like people like. Every time you left Action Park, you usually left like scrapes and scratches.
That was not where I went.
It's something that they would not exist in the way it did back then today.
Sure.
It'd be impossible. Like, nobody would insure that.
Well, no, they would have gotten sued up a fucking wazoo.
You can't even get a metal slide.
Yeah.
Because that burns you. What the fuck were they thinking?
No, we're going to want a nice balsa wood.
So what happened at Action Park that scarred you?
I was about my son's age. My father was an Israeli commando. He was like a Navy SEAL.
Wait, he was an IDF Special Forces guy?
Yes. He was,
holy shit.
He was a Navy SEAL.
If you live in Israel, chances are you are.
Well, no, you have to be in the IDF. But I mean, to be an IDF Special Forces guy, that's a level above.
He actually got the bends. That's how he ended up getting an honorable discharge.
Oh, no shit.
And that's how he ended up coming to America. And meeting my mother at the YMCA. It was wonderful.
That's another story.
I was staying at the YMCA and this woman, I don't know what happened.
But
I don't.
That's my kind of racist voice. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't do that. And again, I will. No.
I'm very offended.
Continue with the story.
So my father, you know, he went to go do this, like, it was like a 6 or 7 story cliff jump. They had a cliff jump. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't a very responsible dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed behind him because I'm 5 or 6. I don't know where the hell else I'm supposed to go.
Yep.
So he gets online. It's like a 30-person line, and it's finally his turn, and he jumps off. And I look at him jump off, and I see him, you know, how many feet below, and I go, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get to my dad now. Like, and no one, like, tried to help me, so I was like, okay, I guess it's time for me to jump.
Oh, my God.
And little 6-year-old Josh belly flops.
Oh! On a 5-meter, on a 10-meter board?
Dude,
I was like 12 when I got the balls to actually hop off that platform.
Oh my
God. That's a long fall. That's like 2 good seconds of just free fall. Free fall.
I remember it.
Impact.
It's not like I was a really brave kid. I was more fearful that I couldn't find my dad like otherwise. It's like, I either jump or I'm not going to be able to find my father. And I belly flop into it. Everybody sees it. And I think a few people gasped because it was a little kid.
How are you not hurt?
Yeah, you could literally explode your balls.
I was completely. I did, but we had them re-implanted.
But I'm pumped. But no, seriously, like they can break ribs if you land wrong. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm an expert, obviously. So what does my dad do? He comes over to me. Everyone's like in a gasp. My father comes and he lifts me in the air and he goes, "Look at my brave son. Oh, look at it." And he parades me around Action Park, telling everybody, "You know
like
what my
the
son
Lion
did?
King?
You know, yeah, exactly. Like it's like Simba.
The circle."
So he parades me around to tell everyone how proud he is of his son who nearly killed himself a few minutes ago.
As you become increasingly redder.
I mean, that is a very special, that is a very, like, you know, Army Special Forces thing, like, jump, go. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that is, like, that is kind of badass.
The truth is, I really was okay with it. I didn't mind. But my father, for some reason, he wanted to brag to my mother as he was driving us home. And he tells my mother, he's like, "Oh, by the way, Joshie jumped off the six story clip. She, you know, she, she was not too excited about it.
That might be the time that I was lost in Disney World.
You were lost in Disney World?
I got lost in Disney World when I was your age. I was six. I went to Disney World with my family. I went on a tram instead of the train. And then I found myself in a different part of Disney World, and they figured it out really quickly. And, you know, my mom had trophies, like two trophies, one for basketball and maybe just one for athleticism in general. But she had a few trophies, the only trophies in the house forever that were on display. And those came into effect because she ran across the frickin' park to find me when some security got me. You know, there's nothing more than a parent who is instilled with fear about where their child is. So when my mom found out that her child was missing, she booked
it. My son!
My cousin Kenny told me that he had never seen my mom run that fast.
It's the most frightening feeling in the world. My ex, she decided to teach me a lesson. So when my son was like 3 or 4 months old, we were in the grocery store. And I think I had the carriage and I like turned my back for a moment and she rolled it away from me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm not a father. I look forward to being a father one day, but like that whole concept of how it just becomes all encompassing, right? Is something that
time stops. Time stops. And it's like someone stole an organ out of your body. And the truth is like, I love my son even more now, but like you love your kid from the second they're alive, you know?
Oh, sure.
Was that really true? Because there's this whole difference between guys and girls, right? Like girls have to nest. And then guys are sort of like, I'm not ready, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. And then they see the baby and they go, I love this baby!
I loved him from the get, but like to be like really fatherly as an actor, you just jump into the role right away. You commit to it slowly but surely. It's like I love him more every single day I'm alive. Like it's every great. Single day. It's insanity.
It's beautiful.
It's a one of a kind feeling.
It is. It's great.
Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we need to dive into some clips that you brought with you. Some of it is embarrassing, I believe. I haven't screened any of it because we like to fly on the seat of our pants here with Josh Pallad, Will Hasty, and Catherine Dunn. Lost and Rewound.
Radio Free Brooklyn.
We're back. We want to remind you that if you want to sign up for the Radio Free Brooklyn newsletter, you can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter. It's called Radio Free Brooklyn, R-E-A-D-I-O Free Brooklyn, and you can keep up to date with the new programming, upcoming RFB events, interviews, ticket giveaways, special offers, and much more. Okay, I'm done. Okay, but seriously, it'll only go to your inbox once a month. We're committed to a spam-free world here. Josh Pallad is our guest this week. And yeah, dude, you got some stuff with you. You got a movie. You got some voicemails. I don't know where to begin here. Let's start with, you know, we were talking about your ex before. You have a voicemail with you.
This is the ex before the ex.
The ex before. Okay, dude.
This is not your baby mama. No, this is
the one that I left for my child's
mother. Okay. How long were you together?
On and off for 5 years.
From what age?
24 to 29.
Who cheated more?
Oh, wow.
I was a total whore.
No, I know. I was asking who cheated more.
Oh, I guess, well, if you listen to the message, she says that she never cheated on me.
Just for our audience at home, just by your facial expression, I'm assuming you're assuming that that's bullshit.
You know, I was listening to the message as I was walking down the block, and I was like, There's a tinge in her voice that makes me not believe that.
Why did you hold on to this voicemail?
I'm sorry, that did not deserve an awe. I just got what you meant.
Because when I received it, when I got the, this is a message from, I think, 2009. And when I got the message, I thought it was just so off the wall and bonkers and kind of hilarious that I thought I should record it.
Oh, my God.
So I recorded it off my cell phone.
Do you feel like this reveals more about you and your character than it does about hers?
No, I think it reveals more about her. I mean, you'll hear tidbits of who I am, but I think it exposes a little bit of insanity on her party.
I'm going to ask you to put yourself at this time in her shoes and wonder what it might be like if you were the one who left a voicemail and was having that voicemail heard on a radio show. What could we expect when we hear this?
I think she'd be happy to know that I'm still thinking about her.
Oh, my God. All right.
That's literally the best answer you could have given.
Okay. Let me tell you something. She took my three dogs and never let me see them again because we had three dogs together.
Oh, dude.
And then, like, a year ago, she called me to tell me that my favorite one died. I was like, thanks. Thanks.
Like, lovingly or literally just like, hey, guess what? He's dead.
She was like, monkey's dead. And I was like, thanks. I was like, I wanted to see the
monkey!
Dog.
Monkey!
I loved monkey. Oh. She was the Japanese chin that another ex-girlfriend gave me.
Wait, they were your dogs?
Well, the Japanese chin was mine. Then
how did she steal your dogs?
Well, because we would like, she would have them at her place and then I would keep them for a little while. And while we first split, like, she let it go until she found out I was dating somebody else, and then she said that I was seeing her while we were still together, so she decided.
Was that accurate?
All right, well, let's listen to the voicemail, and
there's a little overlap.
we'll listen to the voicemail. We'll make our own judgment calls.
Here we go.
I already made mine.
Oh, well, never mind, Catherine.
Well, thanks, Kat. I'm not that person anymore. Tough, huh?
Wow.
I'm on her side.
That was
rough. I totally see. I've lost favor in Catherine's eyes.
That was rough. I won't lie.
That's
So
pretty quintessential.
Just in my defense, just so
I like
you
your
know.
Grandma.
Okay,
I like your and your, I like your mom. Let me, your, and I like your mom.
In your right? defense,
but
so,
you since, fucking scumbag.
Since you are, our
I love
guest
her.
Today,
you if you listen, if you can, it was hard to hear, but she says you're banging so and so's sister who I wasn't. She just confused who I was banging.
Had you banged so and so's sister?
No. I've had a falling out with her too.
After banging her?
Well, she's best friends with my now child's mother, my ex. So yeah, but she said you're doing this while your friends are in federal prison. So my friends at the time, my friends were pot dealers, and there was this huge. It was actually at the time the
mandatory
biggest,
minimums,
the biggest bust in New York City history for marijuana.
Oh. What year was that?
2007. Okay, eight? You can do if you Google New York City's biggest
but
pot
it was,
bust.
Okay, but it was effectively around 10 years ago.
Yes,
and
yes.
You had friends who got caught under.
So, like, it was like the whole neighborhood was a bunch of
somebody dropped a dime on them.
Yeah,
got
one of the kids got.
You were in Forest Hills.
I was in Forest Hills.
Okay.
And one of the kids, one of these, you know, we all grew up together, and one of these jerks who, like, I hated from the time I was a kid,
yeah.
He got caught selling cocaine. So he ended up becoming state's evidence, and he was the mole. So he was, like, entrapping the entire neighborhood.
Yikes.
We didn't even know at that point when this recording took place, but everybody got in trouble. So once, like, my friend, like, and I had trouble with the FBI at the time before I quit being in investments. One of the last places I worked at got raided and closed down, and like I got interrogated by the FBI, and so like I was out of that life. But she saw like I had trouble there, and then my friends were all like going to jail and like getting arrested. So she stopped like hanging out. She was like really scared. She was a public school teacher, so she's like, I'm not hanging out around you anymore. So like, you know, you're not hanging out around me, we're not together anymore, I guess, you know. It's too dangerous.
It seemed that she had every reason to be pretty pissed off at you. My question is, why did she feel that the voicemail was the proper way to do that? That seemed like a lot of words to be saying in a voicemail, to the point where she had to send another voicemail, like, obviously, like, the quintessential, and by the way,
yeah, right.
Voicemail.
That voicemail came after, like, a hammering session of, like, probably a couple hundred phone calls.
Really? Yes, wait, were you and her were actually going back and forth, or
no,
she tried calling you a couple hundred times?
She tried calling me like a couple hundred times.
Gotcha.
I think she accessed a Facebook page, and she saw pictures of me with my child's mother, lovingly, probably.
Accessed?
You know. Yeah,
Blocked? Was she blocked?
No, I mean, this is also early days Facebook, you know, like...
Early-ish.
You know, early-ish. And, you know, she probably, you know, like, not everybody, I guess, knew how to navigate it.
Yeah.
So she probably looked on a friend of a friend, and there wasn't like privacy controls.
You weren't friends before that?
With whom?
With your ex.
No, we were friends, but like she probably looked at like a friend of mine, and like they had pictures.
If this was like 2006, 2007, that was still before the era of like the feed didn't exist yet. You know
what
I mean?
Right. That's right.
So it wasn't like you'd be seeing constant updates. Yeah. That was a pretty late addition.
Yeah.
And so remember, Facebook, the first time Facebook came on to colleges was in 2004, guys. So, like, Facebook had only been around for 3 years, right? And that was, like, I love that era of Facebook because it was still, like,
exclusive.
Just my friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just my friends from college.
I was still maintaining my MySpace page.
Yeah, you were.
While you were maintaining your MySpace page to be the actor that everybody should know, you were making movies?
Well, it was actually right as I was transitioning out of being a stockbroker, an investment advisor, I went and took, I think it was like a 3 or 6 month course at the New York Film Academy.
Awesome.
So,
how did you like it?
It was a total joke.
It sort of is known for being that.
Why did you say it like that?
How did you feel about it? How'd you feel about NYFA?
I wasn't a straight, like, because they have a college type program.
They do.
This was like a 6 month or a 3 month program. It was in the Village, and it was all very, like, I think, I didn't know their exact income, but like wealthy overseas people who were like, I'm going to come to America. I'm going to learn how to be an actor.
I have done films with New York Film Academy before. Most of them are not good, but some of them were good. But one thing is for sure is that NYFA does attract a lot of international interest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's all I know about it, really.
Right. I mean, my first film course ever was at NYFA, and the one thing that I heard about them regularly and still hear from people who I go to for advice about where to get advice, basically on like more technical aspects, is New York Film Academy is great for an introduction.
Yes.
It's great.
It is.
To walk you into that world. But if you want like a hardcore education, not the spot.
If you want access to see like what a boom mic is, or I want to play with a red camera, like, yay, that's the right place. They're like, okay, you're a rich kid. You can come in here and you can touch all the buttons.
Literally.
You seem a little bit salty about it, though.
I made friends there. No, I got a lot out of the experience. I haven't had a really formal education acting-wise, as you'll see in the, the clips coming up. And I've taken some really, like, sketchy acting courses. So, like, I have a little thing for people charging people who are chasing their dream for stupid classes that they're not learning anything and they're just wasting money on.
You give me $200, I'll give you a good time.
You see, it's funny, you're doing that voice. My very first acting coach was an actor from the movie A Bronx Tale.
Oh my God.
He used to be buddy-buddy with Robert De Niro, and De Niro put him in almost every one of his like first 10 or 15 films.
Yeah.
His name is Clem Caserta. He's a famous, a semi-famous actor.
I think I know that.
So he ran an acting school in Staten Island. This was the first acting school I went to, called Jimmy Whispers Acting School.
Oh my God!
And when the stock market would close,
good acting, Jimmy's acting school,
Jimmy Whispers
acting school.
You wouldn't say aloud.
Jimmy wouldn't even let you pay him. The way it would work was this: you show up a few times, you take some lessons, and then every now and then he'd be like, "Hey, you got some scrolls for me?" And then you're like, I don't know what that means. And he's like, you know, you got a little bit of scroll. So like every now and then he'd hit you up for money, but he wouldn't like have an official tuition.
What you got? Like $20? Maybe $40? What you give me? Give me a little scroll.
What you got on you?
I don't believe you. I think this is honestly like out of like something out of a sketch.
Google it.
It's amazing.
I mean, this,
I love
this,
it.
This is,
and he just had a falling out with Chaz Palminteri because you know they did A Bronx Tale on Broadway.
Yeah.
He nixed the character that this guy.
Oh my God! Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Dude,
you were describing like what?
You could be sleeping with the fishes instead of doing this tuition with your kids in an acting school.
It's so true, but you're describing like a lot of people who I interacted with over the course of my misspent years.
let's talk about Twisted then. It was Twisted right out of the makings of the Jimmy Whispers acting school into NYFA.
It's post Jimmy Whispers.
So it's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Yeah. Golden.
I'm going to show you a little exercise I learned from Lorraine Franco, all right? You're going to pretend like you got a coffee cup in your hand, right?
Mm.
And we would stand there for about 10 minutes.
Oh,
and
God.
We'd be like, and now you add the sugar. And everybody would stand in a circle and add.
Was it object work?
I wish.
Were you miming it?
You see, this is good.
Why don't we have more time to talk about this? This is like the best thing ever.
Smell the cord. You smell it there. You see how it's hot in your hand.
Oh, wonderful.
That was one of the main things he would do. And the other one is that he would have us sit in a chair and have the entire acting class, which arranged from people from the age of like 7 to 80. And they would circle around you and sing happy birthday.
What?
And so you had to learn to become comfortable with a group of...
Okay.
It was a very informal train.
All right. No, we got to keep this train going. Yes. I would love to continue hearing stories about this because honestly, it's hysterical.
It was.
More than once?
Are you kidding? This is amazing.
We don't have time to play the entire movie of Twisted. Could you point us out to where you are in this?
So Twisted was a friend who took the directing classes at the New York Film Academy.
Nice.
He held an audition. I auditioned. He was like, you're the one. I need you. He basically became a very, very
good. I see it in you.
He became a very good friend of mine. And he was actually the biggest advocate in the world of me. And like a couple years ago, he passed away. He, awful story. He had a kid and he went out to go celebrate. And the night he went to celebrate, he overdosed on drugs.
That's awful.
Jesus fucking Christ. That's literally.
But we were really close friends. And he was actually writing a film. Yeah, we actually shot some stuff over a couple blocks from here, but he was writing a film before he passed away, and then he just died suddenly. But this was the very first project that we had worked on together. It's a horror short where I play like a redneck, and it's me and my uncle, and we're going to do a home invasion and rob a couple people, but they end up turning the tables on us.
Oh.
Yes. And my very good friend Joe Danielli is in it as well. He plays one of the psychopaths.
Nice.
Listen to a little clip of it.
I'm just so fucking hungry, Uncle Frank. You think maybe they got like that Captain Crunch? Not like the Admiral Crunch that Grandma always fucking buys. I mean like the real shit, you know, like toys inside the
Boy,
box.
Boy, listen here. I don't know what the fuck they're gonna have inside. Whatever it is, we're gonna eat it. And the first chance we get, we're gonna tie these motherfuckers up, look over everything they fucking got, and we're gonna take it.
We gotta hurt them this time, Uncle Frank. Do we?
Well, that ain't up to me, boy. That's up to them. So, there's the house, boy. What the fuck are you doing this way? Not to be looking out there. What are you gonna do, go fishing? What do you think? Look like a good one?
What do you mean it looks like a good one? You told me you scoped this fucking house out, Frank.
I did scope the fucking thing out. I'm asking you, trying to get you in on this now. Does it look like... What the fuck is that, my
It's fucking true in the back, Uncle Frank. Oh, I have God. To spit it out. I can't swallow it.
Let's just go knock and see if they're home.
Wow.
Oh, I'm such a germaphobe.
So was that improvised? So like, so that was that totally improvised?
Yeah, that was a good take.
That was real.
That was real.
That was real. But you get it on my fucking dude. He just if only he hadn't left. But that was so good.
I was a smoker back then, so I started chewing tobacco for the film.
I've never chewed tobacco before. How was that?
I don't know how.
I chewed tobacco in junior high school.
Why?
Wow, my little.
Because you can't smoke in the classroom.
Okay, so then don't do anything.
There's always boofing. No. My little brother got in. He was a pitcher at Rutgers, and just because of that world, he got really into chewing tobacco.
Right.
And he got me into it. And so, dude, Skull was like my shit for a little bit.
How long?
It's great for like 2 weeks. I mean,
yeah,
it was like
exactly.
I did it for a few months. It burns a hole in your mouth.
Well, no, not only like literally with most of those chewing tobaccos, because it really is, you just take the tobacco, put it in your lip, and you're letting it soak through essentially your soft tissue. But here's the thing: they put broken plexiglass in there to actually help create these little micro tears
so that it gets in
faster.
Oh man!
And I was always the dumb fucker who would be like, "Oh, I'm taking a quarter of this fucking can." 35 minutes later, I'm like, I feel a bit.
One thing you won't see because you're listening to this, but should you decide to go and watch this film on YouTube, you can do so by looking up user JLova, L-O-V-A 71, and look up the film Twisted. But you have a considerable weight difference in this film.
Yeah, I'm like, I think I'm like 370 there, maybe.
And it's already 50.
Yeah.
Wait, how much? Wait, how much do you weigh now?
198 pounds.
So, dude, fuck you. That's where I'm trying to get.
That wasn't my fattest. I had lost 100 pounds there.
Good goddamn. Wow.
That's
impressive, dude. That's really impressive.
I was going to say impressive and miraculous. And how? What would you credit your weight loss to?
Children?
My drive to want to get laid.
Okay.
I'll take it.
That works.
I'll take
it. Were you in a 5-year relationship here?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh no, I was getting laid when I was fat, but it just the quality of what I was getting laid
was not as good.
Yeah. And it was just unhealthy relationships. Also, my stepfather had passed away, and he told me I should lose some weight. So,
did you have this experience where your level of acceptance to yourself was a pretty direct reflection of like sort of how happy you were?
I was miserable. I was, but I'm always miserable. It's just who I am.
Well,
dude, I went through the exact same thing with my first love. It was a bad idea for us to get into a relationship, even though it was magical at first, and just, you know, I kept getting bigger.
Right. Oh, so you ate your way in the relationship.
And then I became a drug addict. So I was dragging my way into the relationship.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, now.
I like crutches. It's nice to have them.
Let's listen to the next section there. So there's two parts, and this part... you've made your way into this home.
Right.
The plot is that you are clearly these hicks who are looking to rob and make mischief, and then this crazy couple gets you to come in.
Yes, they're feeding us eggs at this point, I think.
All right,
eggs.
Eggs. Let's hear what happens.
I don't feel good, Uncle Frank.
There he goes. There's some. What the hell did you put in these eggs? There goes one down.
This is wonderful, Roy.
Yes,
Two down, Roy. His eyes are shut, he's down.
Shall we get started?
Oh, I think we shall.
You don't know who you're fucking with, do you?
You don't know who you're fucking with.
I'm scared, Uncle Frank.
Cut your eyeballs out, big boy.
That's what I see with. I don't think that would be good.
Oh, God, right.
You don't need to see that.
Me and Ma are going to be right back. Behave yourself.
Mommy and Daddy are coming right back, little boy. Right back to feed you.
Whatever you say, Roy.
Shh! Silence now. I'd like to hear the crickets. I'd like to hear the crickets roar.
And we don't want to get out of here, Uncle Frank.
How the hell we're going to get out of here?
This is your fucking fault.
Oh, let's not blame anybody right now, okay?
I got a freaking cup taped to my head.
You can't show no fear. You show some fear at these people, you know what's going to happen? They're just gonna shit all over you. You gotta hold your ground here. This one guy, he's fucking nuts. He may be crazier than I am.
I don't wanna get shit on.
Well, I know, fucking dummy. I didn't mean real shit on. What the hell's wrong with you?
Breakfast is served, boys. Mommy made a nice big meal for the nice big boys.
Man, I would love some. May I please just take my handcuff off and feed myself like a normal human?
You're not a big enough boy yet to serve yourself.
Fucking ridiculous.
Here we go. Down the hatchie, little boy.
Is that Trix?
Yes, Trix.
These are actual Trix,
more Trix.
These are not like
and
a
more Trix.
These are not like a fake one.
And more Trix. Oh, really, it's very good for the little Trixie boy.
That's not funny.
Oh, and look what do you have here? Fresh made donuts.
Oh, the donuts is good.
Eat that fucking donut. Eat that fucking, that motherfucking donut.
What are you doing,
Roy?
What are you doing? Oh, God.
Roy. This is so much fun, Roy.
I think I've had enough now.
Is this really necessary, Roy?
This is the most fun. I don't want it.
It's hard for anybody who's not seeing this here. What we're seeing...
We're seeing
both of our antagonists get, right? I mean, effectively, they're technically antagonists. But
I would call them protagonists. I'm on their side.
Now we're on their side.
The home invaders, played by Josh, and your co-star, are being tormented by these folks. And you have a cup taped in front of your face, into your chin.
Like, literally on your like a cup taped to your bottom lip, literally. A jewel cup, almost.
Something around
the
top.
It's because I'm chewing tobacco, so.
Oh, yeah.
You missed it in it. What happened was, a little bit earlier in there, before we eat the eggs, I'm chewing tobacco on the table, and I take the host, the guy's house, his cereal bowl, and I... spit my chewing tobacco.
Hence the revenge.
Yeah.
Oh, you deserve it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yes,
and then the husband there has a pig mask, and another mask is put on your Uncle Roy, right?
Yes, yes.
Like a Dame Edna.
Dame Edna. Dame Edna.
And it's supposed to, and I mean, okay. And so the girl is she breaking, or was that her character? She was just supposed to, or she was just kind of hilariously insane.
She's a pretty successful actress. She was breaking there. She told me. At one point, she actually got really, she started crying because she felt so bad for what they were doing to me. It was great.
Aww. As they shove donuts into your mouth.
As they shove donuts in my mouth.
We can be sure that the work of which you are doing now is certainly much better
much
quality.
Higher caliber,
much higher. Yes. What have you been working on then lately?
I have a feature horror coming out. I think it's going to be this month.
Oh, nice.
With some friends of mine where I'm a co-star. So,
nice. Oh, yeah. Who's directing it?
William Hugh. He had a really successful web series called The Streets.
Nice.
And I had a very small role in that, but he brought me back to be honest. This role that I'm in this film as the co-star was actually written for a African American man, and I read for it and they said I think we're going to have to change Josh into an African American man.
Mm.
Yeah. So you're taking roles away from
white privilege.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
I'm a Jew. I'm a minority man. I'm allowed to.
Well, some of us are. I mean, I would say that technically, you are the son of an Israeli. You have a lot of talent. It doesn't matter one way or the other, as long as you make good work.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Well, Low End Gigolos, talk about that a little bit and where people could find that. You said you have a Patreon for it right now.
So
what's the theme?
Well, we haven't officially launched yet, but we have like 20-something episodes. That's going to be, we have a Libsyn set up, so we're going to have everything
that's
probably
awesome.
Pushed out in the next 6 weeks, we're hoping for. We have a new agent manager who wants us to do it properly.
Good.
So we record. It's just me and three of we have. You know, we've lost a couple members over the course of it.
Hmm.
But it's basically, you know, you know,
attrition.
Young scorned comedians complaining about life and
hey,
cool
comedy. And
there's
like
there's
that.
Nothing there. There's nothing.
That's
totally new, right?
Sounds like a formula to me. So you could find more information at Joshua Palad, P-A-L-E-D again. And
You could do Joshua Palad on Facebook.
Yes.
You can do Joshua Palad on Instagram.
Yep.
At Low End Gigolos on Instagram. And you can start following us on Twitter that we just established. It's low_end_gigolos Twitter.
Josh Palad here on Lost and Rewound.
Thank
this
you guys.
Week. Team player, you got here very last minute, sir, and I appreciate you being game for sharing your New York Film Academy work and your voicemails from a scorned lover.
Thank you.
You rolled with us well, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys, Rob.
And if you want to contribute anything out there, sir or madam or non-binary person, whomever is listening to Lost and Rewound and be on the show, you can contribute send us your pitches, lostandrewound@radiofreebrooklyn.org. That'll do it for us this week. I'm Alon. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks, Alon.
Thanks, Alon.
This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks so much again, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Radio Thank Free. You.
Real quick, put your fingers in your mouth and do it, and then you won't. No, like this.
Like literally, no, this is actually a trick. This is actually a trick that works.
You're listening. To Lost and Rewound. On Radio Free Brooklyn. Time
to get involved.
With us.
Okay.
All right, now do it.